Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another Intelligence Squared U.S. debate. I'm John Donvan of ABC News Nightline, and I will be moderating as the debaters that you see sharing the stage here with me at the Caspary Auditorium at the Rockefeller University in New York City. Six debaters, two tables, three against three, will be debating this motion. It is wrong to pay for sex. Now, this is not a seminar or a panel discussion. This is a competition of ideas and logic and quick-wittedness and perhaps charm, but most of all, persuasion, because by the time this debate concludes, you, the audience, will have voted twice, both before the debate and once again at the end. Your vote is to tell us whether you side with or against the teams on this stage and their arguments, and the team which has changed the most minds over the course of the debate will be declared the winner. And now round one. Arguing for the motion, Wendy Shalit, a writer who has made something of a career of writing about the topic of modesty and seems to come up with an excellent gift for titles. Her first piece for Commentary when she was a college student at Williams College criticizing the co-ed bathroom policy was "A Lady's Room of One's Own."
Thank you. Before delving in, I still have in my mind the song I heard on the way to the airport on the radio, which went like this. "I'm not a saint, but I'm not a sinner. Everything's cool as long as I'm getting thinner." Which I think expresses a profound truth, actually. It's a serious question. In a society in which the self is the body, to some degree, as long as we're getting thinner, do we even believe that there is such a thing as a sexual right and a sexual wrong? Right? Nobody wants to judge. Adultery is now a lifestyle choice. A 22-year-old woman from San Diego is now auctioning off her virginity to the highest bidder. Right? And we're not supposed to judge. We're talking about using a human being as a means to your ends. Today, people want to believe that paying for sex is just like paying for a hamburger. But a sexual transaction is different because it touches on the deepest, most personal aspects of ourselves. The proof that sex is different, in my opinion, is our response to the terrible crime of rape. If paying for sex were as morally neutral as paying for a hamburger, well, then rape is akin to just forcing someone to eat a hamburger. Right? But of course it is not. It's a horrible crime that is serious precisely because sexuality touches on the deepest, most personal aspect of our humanity. And to take something so intimate and to turn it into a commodity has far-reaching, devastating effects for men, women, and children. Everyone agrees that after the Netherlands adopted legalization, that this has added fuel to the gangs who trafficked in underage girls, and that the abuse and child prostitution exploded rather than was reduced. It's time to ask why. Well, firstly, what we value in women eventually trickles down to girls. Secondly, prostitution, like all industries, is demand-led. Someone could go to great trouble manufacturing coats made from cockroaches, but since nobody wants cockroach coats, the supplier would soon find that there's no market, no demand, and no money in it, except maybe Ozzy Osbourne would buy it. But because prostitution is demand-led, it's the paying for sex that's a problem. That's what creates the demand. And given that the average age of entry into prostitution is 13 or 14 years old, I think this presents a huge moral problem. To those who are against trafficking, but they insist that some women have nothing else to sell but their bodies, I say that they suffer from a real lack of imagination. It's this philosophy of "this is all she can do" and the not-too-subtle misogyny behind it that feeds the demand and the expectations that cause the problem. Thank you.
Up first to speak against the motion that it's wrong to pay to sex, Lionel Tiger, the Charles Darwin professor of anthropology at Rutgers University, the anthropologist who gave us the term male bonding. He has been arguing more recently that it is men who get the short end in society. Given, Lionel, your writing about men's issues, I've always wondered, Tiger, is that something you Adopted late in life, or were you born a tiger?
It's appropriate for that branch of show business known as the academic profession. It works quite well.
Ladies and gentlemen, Lionel Tiger.
Thank you very much. I have to say, I'm quite confounded by this because it's quite clearly wrong to pay for wrong sex. We're all opposed to coercive sex. We're all opposed unequivocally, I'm sure, to the kind of stories we hear about the Russian mafia trafficking women whose passports are stolen from them and then they have to work off their fare and so on. These are all obvious. They're not debatable. I won't debate them, therefore. But what we have, with respect to Wendy just heard, is a perfect contemporary exposition of the early 20th century sociological fallacy, which is you look for a deviant phenomenon and attribute to that the nature of the normal. So by talking about rape, talking about toddlers being abused sexually, this then frames the entire discussion of what you guys and gals may decide to do in your own homes, with your own lust, with your own love, and that is simply methodologically wrong. And furthermore, I get here, and forgive me for maybe counter-casting here, but I think this entire argument somehow is profoundly disrespectful to females. If you want to see people paying for sex, I suggest you go to the ground floor of Bloomingdale's. The place is full of women paying for unguents, garments, colors, clasps, various instruments of torture, lust, you name it, but they're paying for their own sense of themselves as sexual creatures, and they're not on that floor because they don't like sex and they don't like what it means. Women have a deal with men which requires that they have some relationship with men, especially if they're inclined to reproduce, which still 80% of women in North America do. I'm an anthropologist. We're interested in what people around the world do. Over 90% of human marriages are arranged. We don't do it with cattle. We do it with some exotic unit called the diamond ring. But the point is that this is a classic anthropological phenomenon. My time is...
Lionel Tiger, ladies and gentlemen, whose time is up. Of all of our debaters tonight, our next speaker, who will be arguing for the motion that it's wrong to pay for sex, has truly brought the arsenal of the researcher to this topic. Melissa Farley is a clinical and research psychologist with Prostitution Research and Education, which is a nonprofit that she founded. She is an associate scholar with the Center for World Indigenous Studies. Her position on prostitution has been described as abolitionist, and I'm assuming, Melissa, that our familiarity with that word and the topic of slavery is no coincidence for you.
It is not.
Ladies and gentlemen, Melissa Farley.
Some words hide the truth. Just as torture is named enhanced interrogation, and the logging of old growth forests is called the Healthy Forest Initiative, so also prostitution is named a choice, a job, work, a victimless crime, and on Craigslist, it's called a wide range of personal meeting and relationship opportunities. These pimp-messaged slogans are good for business, but there's not much truth to them. What's wrong with prostitution is the renting out of a woman's mouth, vagina, or anus, and what that does to her psychologically. What's wrong with prostitution and what's wrong with buying sex are the same things that are wrong with other forms of violence against women, incest, rape, and battering. Prostitution is not a choice because the precise conditions that make a choice are absent. a woman in India who worked in an office where she concluded that she might as well be paid for the sexual harassment that was expected of her anyway in her job. That's not a choice. The teen in California who said that in her neighborhood, boys grew up to be dealers and pimps and girls to be hoes. She was the third generation of prostituted women in her family. And prostitution more severely harms people who are indigenous or ethnically marginalized because of their lack of alternatives. That's not a choice. Women in prostitution face a statistical likelihood of weekly rape. A woman at a legal brothel in Nevada said, "It's like you sign a contract to be raped." Women in prostitution are seen as body parts or fake girlfriends, and their feelings don't matter, and they're not seen as human, which is perhaps why they're murdered at a higher rate than any other group of women ever studied. What's wrong with sex is what Johns themselves tell us about it. For example, if you look at it, it's paid rape. She has to do what you want. I use them like I might use any other amenity, a restaurant or a public convenience. It's like renting an organ for 10 minutes. In research interviews with Johns, we've found that their abuse of women extended to women who had not been prostituted yet. The Johns that bought the most women in prostitution were the most likely to commit sexually coercive acts with non-prostituting women. Please don't be fooled by people who tell you buying sex is just another job. It's wrong to set aside a special class of women, those who are the most vulnerable among us, for men's sexual use. What's wrong with paying for sex is it's the business of sexual exploitation.
We are halfway through our opening round. I'm John Donvan of ABC News Nightline, your moderator. We have heard from three debaters arguing this motion, it is wrong to pay for sex. Our next debater will rise now to argue against that motion. I'd like to introduce Tyler Cowen, who is a professor of economics at George Mason University and director of the Mercatus Center, a think tank that uses economic tools to solve real-world policy issues. Tyler Cowen.
This is a very serious matter, and to take it seriously, I propose we start by looking at human diversity. Consider an example. You're a 19-year-old American soldier, and you've been drafted to fight the Nazis in France. And you have, to put it bluntly, never done it before. And before the eve of a big battle, you go and you buy sex from a French woman who maybe needs the money to feed her kids. Or maybe you're a young man and you have sexual problems, and you hire a sexual surrogate to help you with those problems, and you go on to have a loving and successful marriage. Or maybe you're a handicapped person who, for whatever reasons, finds it a better way to achieve sexual ends is to pay for sex. These are all examples of the diversity of the human condition. What the other side is neglecting is this diversity, a diversity of individuals, a diversity of situations, a diversity of cultures. If you look at the broad sweep, the history of mankind, there's a big long book by Niels Ringdahl on the history of prostitution. He looks at medieval India, he looks at the Tang Dynasty, he looks at Renaissance courtesans, and what you find is a wide variance of outcomes. You find a lot of cases where things go fine, and you find a lot of cases where things don't go fine. I propose what we have here is a human activity which very frequently is badly regulated. And when it is badly regulated, you will see massive amounts of abuse, unfairness, exploitation. And I recognize the other side in pointing out these abuses. But the problem is that it is a badly regulated activity. There are many, many cases, three of which I've outlined, where consenting adults meet, they meet voluntarily, both of them are better off, and buying of the sex is not wrong. All of the abuses listed by the other side you can find in another institution called marriage. If you go around the world and go to poorer cultures and ask within marriage, How often is there rape? How often is there abuse, exploitation? But to go back to our resolution, the correct answer is not to condemn marriage, to say that marriage is wrong. There's simply a category error being made by the other side in this debate. Go take a look at New Zealand, where prostitution is legal. It has been legal since 2003. There's a lot of evidence that it's actually gone pretty well. A survey of the prostitutes revealed that 73% of them do it to pay household expenses, 24% of them are doing it to pay for education, 38% are doing it to help out their children or support an older family member. And the rates of abuse, coercion, and rape, the rate of rape is extremely low. It seems to be lower in prostitution than in a lot of other settings. It is not going away. If there's one thing that we all should realize in this room, it's that the buying of sex is not going away. What we want is that it happen in a better way rather than a worse way. We need to have a constructive attitude.
Tyler Cowen. Our next speaker, speaking for the motion that it is wrong to pay for sex, it's interesting in the context of a debate, is actually somebody who has changed the terms of debate in this country in a way that has changed all of our lives. Catherine MacKinnon, a professor of law at the University of Michigan and also Harvard, pioneered the legal claim for sexual harassment as sex discrimination. Ladies and gentlemen, Catherine MacKinnon.
What I know about prostitution, I know from the prostituted women that I work for, representing them because they asked me to. No one opposes the normal business of prostitution for money, that is, of sex for money, more or more eloquently than the women who are living in this industry, most of whom are trafficked by international definition because they are being pimped. And they want to get out, and they can't, thus fitting the international definition of slavery. When you want to get out of marriage, there's a term called divorce. 85% of women, when asked what they most want, that is, women in prostitution, say what they want is to get out, but they don't know how to. Usually they got in as children. In prostitution, women have sex with men they would never otherwise have sex with. The money thus acts as a form of force, not as a measure of consent. It acts like physical force does in rape. And as Kathleen Barry put it, the only difference between rape and prostitution is time. One ends, the other doesn't. It's abusive. It's intimately violative. It's destructive. It's damaging. It's dangerous. It's exploitive. And it's unequal. It's up to you to decide if this is right or wrong. Now, to be against this is why those of us who are today supporting this proposition support the Swedish model. In this model, the buyer is strongly criminalized. In criminalizing the person who is the one who's buying the sex, you are criminalizing the one that my desperately poor Indian clients from India call the real criminal. And you decriminalize the sold. You couple this with real education, real employment opportunities, real jobs, real money. Women are entitled to real equality and real choices. We're asking you to vote yes for this proposition as a way to weigh in on the side of the view that women and children are not for sale.
Sydney Biddle Barrows is a successful businesswoman and consultant who is most known for her work running a prostitution ring called Cachet in the early 1980s for about 5 years until her arrest. The tabloids were particularly drawn to the fact of your lineage, which you have captured in the title of the book. You wrote about your experience as the Mayflower Madam. You had how many ancestors on the Mayflower?
Both sides.
Both sides. Okay, so you have Puritans in your past. Ladies and gentlemen,
they're all rolling arguing, over in their graves.
arguing against the motion, Sydney Biddle Barrows.
Thank you. Freud once asked the question, what do women want? And I would argue that what women want is their own money. But what's interesting is some of the statistics that I've been hearing, because what's interesting is the only people that you can get these statistics from are the people at the very, very bottom. And they constitute a very small percentage of all of the working girls, at least in the United States. I cannot speak for anywhere else. And because I have to tell you that I don't recognize any of the kinds of clients that the opposition has talked about. I don't recognize any of the kinds of girls that the opposition has talked about. So let me tell you a little bit about the experiences that I had. First of all, most of them are students. I did not hire anyone under the age of 19. No one I know, and I know dozens and dozens and dozens of madams, ever hires girls under the age of 18. Never. I only took 40% of the young ladies' earnings, and they wanted to give that money to me. They didn't have to, but I took the phone calls. I'm the one who set it up. I'm the one who checked them out. I'm the one that made sure they got the money. If for some reason, you know, at the end of the evening he didn't pay, I would still pay her. And can I tell you something? In 5.5 years, you should pardon the expression, we never once got stiffed. And we got and we got the money at the end. So let me tell you about Colby. Colby was the daughter of a doctor, and she was used to living a very privileged life. She was in medical school, and she had several siblings who were either in college or medical school or law school or whatever. And Colby had a thing for, you know, beautiful clothes. $600 boots is actually the example she gave to me. And she came to work for me because she felt guilty asking her father, who had so many other, you know, of her siblings in school, to give her $600 for a pair of boots. This was Colby's choice, but this is the reason she worked for me, so that she could have $600 boots. And I know a lot of people are going to find this offensive, but I don't think there's one single solitary girl that worked for me who didn't come back after the very first time and say, I can't believe it was so easy. I can't believe I didn't do this before. I know this is offensive to some people, but may a lightning bolt come down. This is what they said. Now, when you figure that what we used to euphemistically call the nitty-gritty only lasted maybe 5, 7, 8 minutes, and yet the clients kept the young ladies for 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, what were they really paying for? A lot of them pay for the company. They pay because they want a pretty girl to talk to and to have a good time with. I had a couple clients who had invalid wives who felt that it was cheating if they got a girlfriend, but they still had needs that they need to have met. So while it is true that there are a lot of bad people out there doing bad things to girls, I think to say that all of these girls are abused, that all of these girls are taken advantage of, that they're all traumatized, yes, there are some, but it's certainly not the majority. And I want them to throw away the key on these people too. But I think to tar everyone with the same brush is just not being realistic, because there are a lot of good people out there who are doing this. And to criminalize these girls and to give them records so that they can't go and live a normal life just to me doesn't seem right.
Sydney Biddle Barrows. Thank you. And that concludes round one of the debate tonight. As things stand now, 20% of you are for the motion, it is wrong to pay for sex, 50% of you are against, and 30% of you are undecided. We will have you vote again towards the end, and we choose the winner depending on which side has moved the most votes. So we're going to move now on to round two. And in round two, the debaters speak directly to one another, and we also take questions from you. But I want to kick off the questions first by turning to the panel and saying, after hearing the opening statements, I feel as though I'm hearing two teams debate two entirely different worlds, one in which in one of these worlds, prostitutes are workers. In the other world, prostitutes are captives. In one world, prostitutes have free choice. In another world, prostitutes have no choice whatsoever. Catherine, you had said that there really is no free will. If you are a prostitute, it is never your choice.
I didn't say what you just said. I said that it's always in a context of sex inequality in which your options are precluded to begin with. You know, prostitution is what women do when all else fails, and all else fails often. And there are a lot of things that men do in general when all else fails, and prostitution is not that thing. And that means this is an institution of sex inequality. It is. But I would also note that we actually agree, that is, Ms. Barrows and us concur in the view that the prostituted people need to be decriminalized firmly. That is the Swedish model. And it's the buyers who we're here to talk about, the Johns that Melissa described, and whether what it is they are doing when they are buying people.
Your teammate, Melissa Farley.
I would like to quote, to respond to what Sydney said and quote from her book, which is, she said, a call girl is simply a woman who hates poverty more than she hates sin. I would use the word prostitution and not sin. So I would say a call girl is simply a woman who hates poverty more than she hates prostitution. I think that's the whole point we're making here. That shouldn't be the choice. If we're seeking an end to inequality between men and women, if we're seeking an end to violence against men and women, women should not have to make the choice between poverty and education, paying the next month's rent, and prostitution.
From the other side, Lionel Tiger.
I'm sorry that this whole discussion now is focused on prostitution. I thought that what we were talking about was the economics of human sexuality, and that is really the parsimonious fundamental issue that we have here. People engage, and I mentioned the engagement ring, in marriages, which have immense responsibilities to the next generation, to communities, to relatives, to friends, and we're somehow putting the immensely complex and both luxurious and difficult business of being an adult lover into the same rubric as prostitutes who, and I think there's an argument to be made that, yes, it's terrible. Now we're starting to hear how this all expresses sexual inequality and racial inequality. Please, let's try to limit the discussion to the subject of human sexuality and stop including every single allergic category that comes into these discussions.
Like reality, for example?
Wendy Shalit, what Lionel is doing is saying that buying a diamond ring is paying
right.
for sex.
Yeah, I'd like to I think it's actually the negative team that is equating marriage and dating with paying for sex. The negative team is conflating things that should not be conflated. First of all, in prostitution, there's no shared desire, right? Which means one person is an object. That's a big difference. Also, marriages in which there is a transactional element, in which it's, okay, you give me this, I'll give you this. There's a 50-50 exchange of services, end up failing precisely because that's not what a marriage is, right? But I want to address the free choice issue because Ms. Barrow said that she doesn't recognize any of the girls or the men. So I just want to refresh her memory. Because I thought her book was really interesting. And she said, quote, quite a few of the new girls that she used had no money and nothing appropriate to wear. So I would take them to Saks and charge whatever they needed on my credit card. They would pay me back from their future earnings. When she found a fabulous ground floor apartment for her office, which was super cheap, the rate was made up for by making her girls sleep with the landlord, who she said was only interested in one thing and lived in a seedy, semi-furnished apartment and made them feel cheap. She says the girls weren't crazy about the plan, and really one can see why. Is that free choice?
Tyler Cowan, you want to come back to that?
Our moderator is a very objective fellow, and what he's pointed out is that there are many different worlds here, and this is true. The other side is asking for a blanket condemnation of a practice. It is a diverse set of situations with many entirely acceptable outcomes, a lot of very bad outcomes, and the other side is simply pressing the emotional buttons again and again and again. And I urge you to resist that, to stand back, look at the bigger picture. In my view, the correct answer is to side with us.
Tyler, you're saying sometimes it's okay to pay for sex.
There are many instances where the practice is badly regulated and we observe bad outcomes. Trafficking is an example. None of us are defending that, but that's not the proposition.
Is there a sometimes? Tyler Cowen is arguing that sometimes it's okay to pay for sex. Not using the word quadriplegic, but that was implied, that somebody who may not have an opportunity for another sexual experience and therefore hires a prostitute. Wendy Shalit?
Yes, I'd like to address that because I think those are really important points that he raised. If you show me a man who's handicapped, I will give you a man with the same disability who has a woman who loves him. And women are not that superficial. And if somebody, there's a lot of women who love men. And if there's somebody who's using prostitution as an excuse, I think that's a problem.
I'm John Donvan, and you're listening to Intelligence Squared U.S., Oxford-style debating on America's shores. The motion up for debate is, it's wrong to pay for sex. Stay with us. A question from the middle of the aisle. Ma'am, your turn.
Norma Ramos from the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women. My question I would like to have addressed by Dr. Farley and Catherine McKinnon. We keep hearing that the solution is better regulation. I'd like you both to address what the real experiences are in the countries such as the Netherlands and Germany that are regulating the commercial sexual exploitation of women, which we at the Coalition Against Trafficking in Women refer to as the world's oldest oppression.
Catherine McKinnon?
Yeah, Germany is actually thinking about the Swedish model at this point, having discovered that a tremendous amount of trafficking is produced by the draw of legalization. And that's the same as in the Netherlands, although they're not considering the Swedish model at this point. What happens is that the men who want to buy all the things that are abusive and dangerous and destructive to the women go to the ever-exploding illegal industry around it, right? So you legalize it in the name of having a well-regulated prostitution industry, and exploding around it is the illegal industry for which there is no legal structure to address for all the men who, to begin with, want to have sex without condoms.
Tyler Cowen, your opponent, does that mean you have been arguing that it can be regulated to safety?
It can be regulated.
So
apparently he's a lot smarter than, you know, several hundred years worth of other people who have tried to regulate and who have a million different ideas about how to do it.
Tyler Cowen.
I spoke at length about New Zealand. There's a several hundred page study about the experience, which I have read. The other side has not uttered a peep about this. And even in the example of Germany, it's just been admitted the real problem is the illegal trade, which should in some way be decriminalized. The European model can be improved, but for the most part, the Western European model has worked better than what we do right here. This is widely understood throughout the world.
Melissa Farley.
I actually have read the New Zealand report, and in New Zealand, the Maori people are prostituted much younger and much longer, and they're more frequently homeless. So we again have that situation in New Zealand of a special class of people who
but
are
Melissa,
more vulnerable.
Are you saying that regulation can never wipe out abuses, or do you just not like the idea anyway?
Here's the answer to that. It's counterintuitive. It's been tried and it didn't work. The mayor of Amsterdam said, "We thought it would work to regulate. Well-intentioned people thought it would work to regulate, and it didn't." They're shutting down over a third of the legal brothels in Amsterdam right now. Why? Because of 80% of the women in Dutch legal prostitution are moved there from economically stricken Europe, and because there's organized crime that's out of control. Legalization is a pimp magnet. So, I mean, that's the answer. We know that it doesn't work. It's been tried.
Lionel Tiger, who argues against the motion, wants to pick up on that last point.
This is not exactly a
a trivial issue, and I'm afraid it's being reduced in its importance into a sentimental kind of grab bag of victim complaints.
Why sentimental?
Well,
victim complaints.
Because it's easy. Essentially, what I'm trying to do here is get the argument into the larger context of human sexuality and away from a relatively, again, sentimental concern. There was just, if I may make one final comment on this, there was recently the publication, and we've known in the primatology trade about it for years, that it turns out that chimp males who hunt will give meat to women who...
To women?
Females, maybe, to female chimps. But the fascinating thing is that it's not just a quid pro quo, because these become sustained and durable relationships in which the male is a consort and an associate of the female, even when she's not in estrus and therefore sexually available. And that is, it's kind of haunting, because it suggests that this is actually a more elegant phenomenon that just giving meat to a female.
Okay. I see Wendy Shalit is quite anxious to come in on this.
We're not debating whether it's common to pay for sex. We're arguing whether it's right or wrong. Yes. And
question
because,
from the right
just,
side?
Just because the chimps can provide an explanation doesn't mean that it's right.
The questioner is over on the far right here.
My question to you is a simple one. Is it okay to buy a 20-year-old woman if that woman entered prostitution as a 4-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 12-year-old?
Probably not. There are plenty of cases, as I'm more than willing to admit, where what goes on is wrong. But again, look at the resolution. The key point is that there are diverse practices and multiple worlds. What you're finding from the other side is to take a woman in a difficult situation, choosing her best option. I'm saying blame the difficult situation. They're saying blame the best option. It's a very simple choice. Which one are you going to blame?
We're talking
Melissa
about
Farley.
The evidence of harm here. And the evidence of harm, I think the other side has just conceded the debate. If it's wrong to prostitute someone who was a child when they entered prostitution, then what we know, and there's no argument about these numbers, is that in the vicinity of 75 to 85 or 90% of everyone in prostitution entered prostitution as a legal minor. That's a fact.
Sydney Barrows.
When she says that's a fact, that may be a fact with respect to the people who have been interviewed. But you have to remember that the people who were interviewed for this sort of thing are a great minority. They're the ones that are in the most trouble. And so they're the ones that these people get to talk to and to interview. And I'm not debating that these people have horrible problems. But to take a small minority and to apply their problems to the majority is just wrong.
Catherine McKinnon.
Yeah, this research has been very carefully designed so that they really are a representative sample of people at all levels, at all class divisions in the industry. What's being described by Ms. Barrows is research she doesn't know. And the PTSD rates don't vary according to class level is the other thing to remember. What we're talking about is people whose human rights are being violated. The vast majority of people in the sex industry, somebody else is taking the pimp's cut off their prostitution. And this is what is being bought when you're buying sex. It is an industry of human rights violation.
So on to round three, closing statements by each of the debaters. Speaking first against the motion, Lionel Tiger, anthropology professor at Rutgers University.
We have taken a subset of human behavior which we all disagree with and despise, which is coercive, which is covered by painfully wrought criminal law and so on. And we've turned that into a metaphor and then a description of the common human experience that we all have of men and women, or men and men, or women and women together. Sex is about human evolution, it's about reproduction, it's the most important thing any species has to attend to. All I want to protect here is the notion that sex is not a disease, that sexual interaction is not necessarily an exploitative phenomenon, that it has its own legitimacy, its own agenda, and it will and has continued in much the same way, and a sensible society will try to make it better, not to criminalize it.
Thank you, Lionel Tiger. And now summarizing her position for the motion, Wendy Shalit, author of The Good Girl Revolution, Young Rebels with Self-Esteem and High Standards.
Nobody has addressed my point that no one asks the ages of the girls when they pay for sex. And that is the link between the trafficking of children as well and the devaluing of women and children's innocence that happens in a society that makes sex into a commodity. To validate that, and to declare that paying for sex is perfectly fine, is to say something about society's relationship to women, and especially girls, that I think would be detrimental. But also to men. We've all read that Times article about sugar daddies, but to me what was so touching is the man who went on the website and he just gave the girl a monthly stipend for her education, and he refused to have sex with her. And this is what the debate is about. It's about who we want to be. And if you think that what the man did didn't matter, that he supported her education without even meeting her, and you think he could have just easily paid for sex, and that would have been the same choice morally, then vote for the negative team. But if you can see the beauty in that choice, then vote for the proposition.
Thank
because
you.
We're not a monkey. Men are not monkeys. And
thank
women,
you, Wendy Shalit.
Women are not chicken. Thank you.
Thank you. Summarizing against the motion, Tyler Cowan, economics professor at George Mason University.
If you're in any doubt, just consider different parts of the world and where they would line up in this debate. The notion that there are real abuses, but that buying sex is something that we should tolerate, is extremely common in Western Europe. If you look at the debates over prostitution in the country of Iran, you hear exactly, and I mean exactly, the same arguments in Iran that you have heard from the people on the other side of this debate. If you're in any doubt, ask yourself, in which set of societies, with which set of attitudes, would you rather live? Western Europe, or the kinds of places and cultures where the attitude toward prostitution is that which you find to my right? Think about that, and then please vote accordingly. Thank you.
Thank you, Tyler Cowan. Summarizing her position for the motion, It Is Wrong to Pay for Sex, Melissa Farley, a psychologist at Prostitution Research and Education.
I think it's wrong to pay for sex. There's no mutuality of sexual pleasure or any other kind of power in prostitution, where one person has the social, legal, and economic power to buy another person and to use them as a sexualized puppet. By the way, one of the kinds of damages we haven't talked about today is the damage to women's sexuality after being in prostitution for a long time. They usually are not capable of any kind of sexual intimacy that reflects the years of selling that particular act in prostitution. They say that's stolen from them. Maybe the primates we should take a lesson from are the bonobos. When female bonobos are co-dominant, males are less aggressive and females are more sexual. There's a lot of sexuality in bonobo society. Everyone's having sex, but it's used for mutual pleasure. It's used to cement social bonds. And by the way, the first time an adolescent male gets sexually aggressive, the female elder bonobos get together and kick his ass. He learns from that one experience that that's not what sex is. So One other comment about legalization of prostitution. It really is a failed experiment. The same numbers of women in legal prostitution in Nevada want to escape it. The same numbers are homeless as in other kinds of prostitution. This institution of prostitution is built on the exploitation and abuse of women. It can't be fixed, only abolished. I'm relentlessly optimistic about men's capacity for change. It's wrong to buy sex.
Thank you, Melissa Farley. Summarizing her position against the motion, the Mayflower Madam, Sydney Biddle Barrows.
Well, people have tried to legislate human nature and morality for centuries, and it's never worked. It is true that it's when it comes to the younger girls, I think it's tragic, and I don't understand why we are not absolutely prosecuting to the fullest extent of the law men who want to have sex with a young girl. I mean, I'm talking really young girls and children. Decent men don't want to do that. And to paint every woman with the same tar brush is not right, because there are a lot of men who pay for sex because they feel, and I'm going to hear the hisses on this one, that it's being respectful. Now, what is more disrespectful or respectful? A man's in a bar, he pours $30, $40 worth of drinks down a girl's throat, says, oh, you know, I'm really feeling something for you. Why don't you come up and see my etchings? So she goes up, she sees his etchings, and he has his way with her because she's so drunk that she can practically say no. And then, oh, yes, oh, sure, I'll call you tomorrow. He never does. She's just been used. But a guy who thinks that a woman is worth it, he calls up and he says, I think that it's worth $500 an hour. I don't think that there's anything. I mean, you have a lot of very honest men out there who pay for it because they believe it's the right thing to do, that it's a fair exchange, and the women should be allowed to take the money. Why not?
Thank you, Sydney Barrows. And our final speaker tonight, summarizing her position for the motion, It's Wrong to Pay for Sex, Catherine McKinnon, professor of law at the University of Michigan.
From the other side, we've heard that paying for sex is old, that it's diverse, that it's natural, although I don't think there are any pimps among chimps, that there's a global grandeur to human sexuality. And the hard issue, I think, for our side is what to do when women aren't paid for anything else. I've recently been working with 13-year-old girls who are the sole support of their families in intergenerational, caste-based prostitution in India. But they are the ones who are saying, not how can you take this one and only thing away from us that is the only thing that anyone will buy. They are the ones who are saying, give us any real option. Our economic desperation that has put us in this position is not all our lives can be. The other thing that is not being addressed by the other side is the question, why aren't men being sold for sex? Like, by the millions worldwide in the same ways and in the same proportions women are. It seems to me that if being bought and sold for sex is part of the grandeur of human sexuality, that men are really missing out on something here.
Thank you, Catherine McKinnon. So you voted before the debate on whether you agree or disagree with the motion, it is wrong to pay for sex. You have just now voted again. And here we go. Before the debate, 20% of you were for the motion, 50% were against the motion, and 30% were undecided. After the debate, 45% of you are for the motion, 46% are against, and 9% are undecided. The side for the motion wins. Congratulations to all of them, and of course, to the art of persuasion itself. From me, John Donvan, and Intelligence Squared, thank you.
On those winning and losing numbers, we saw some interesting results when we broke the voting down by sex. It seems women in the audience kept a more open mind. Only a quarter of women initially agreed that it was wrong to pay for sex. At the end, it was more than half of them. Men, however, came in voting roughly 2-1 against the motion, and that ended up almost unchanged. This Intelligence Squared U.S. debate, presented by the Rosenkranz Foundation, was held on the campus of the Rockefeller University. Robert Rosenkranz is chairman. Dana Wolf is executive producer. Maureen McMurray and Rob Christensen are the radio producers. Damon Whittemore is the audio engineer. I'm your host, John Donvan. For more information or to purchase tickets to future events, visit www.intelligencesquaredus.org. Intelligence Squared is distributed by NPR, National Public Radio.